Welcome to Which Game First, where we explored the hilariously huge world of board games. Did we find any hidden treasures you've been missing out on? Let's find out. First up this week, it's pesticide warnings be damned as we grow big in mutant crops. Next up, we collect the finest breeds of man's best friend to take on a stroll through the dog park. And lastly, we warm up and stretch as we get ready to roll and write our way to the Diceathlon. I'm your host, Celeste DeAngelis, here with my decades-long gaming buddies, Evan Bernstein.
Hi, everyone.
Ed Povilaitis.
Whoa, let's get ready to roll.
And Mike Grenier.
Bazinga!
Our first game up this week is Mutant Crops, designed by Sebastian Kozener and Rocio Ognjanovic, published by Atheris Games, number of players 1 to 4, ages 14 and up, playtime 15 to 30 minutes. All right, Mike, what's in this box?
The cover of the box presents us with a pissed-off pear, a slovenly strawberry, and a menacing melon, seemingly on the attack. When we dig into the box, we find 19 crop cards, 12 action cards, 90 tokens, a turn order card, 4 player cards, and 11 meeples. And that's what's in the box.
Well, before we tell you how this garden grows, Evan, water the rules.
Oh, that's wow. A good start to the Ouch. Day, Celeste. I love it. Mutant Crops. It's a fast and light resource management and worker placement game where players are farmers in the near future, where agrotoxins and contamination created some strange mutant plants. You have 12 actions on the table, half of which are face down, half of which are face up, that allow you to gather resources, get plants, and nurture them. Each turn, you're going to have either 2 or 3 actions, depending on the number of players in the game. You place your farmers on spaces to gain resources, such as seeds, or water, or food. Use your seeds to plant a type of mutant crop, and then use your water and food to unleash their potential, such as earning money or activating that plant's special powers. Certain combinations of plant powers can yield greater advantages for your yields, including more money. Money are the victory points. And it's one worker to a space, so your farmer might be blocking your opponent from the space they so desperately need. But hey, all's fair in this battle of toxic farming.
Wow.
All right. Well, it sounds pretty dark, but is it? How does this game look?
I mean, the art is nicely done. I'm not sure if I would call those crops, though, but yeah.
I mean, it's pretty colorful. It's not treated as a grim subject matter. It's treated fun. What did you think of the art?
It looked slimy, which I liked. I like that.
I describe it as disturbing because, like, on one of the vegetables, for instance, it has a face and it's upside down. You know, so like that screams to me like, you know, total mutant. Like, don't get within 1,000 feet of that thing.
Yeah, the pepper has like sharp teeth and like 3 eyes and everything's kind of too small. It's like legs akimbo, like, you know, it's just, ugh.
Fact that these things have legs and arms is a little disturbing.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
And yet somehow I thought they were a little bit cute.
They are kind of cute. I'll agree with that.
Sure. Why is the cucumber running for its life, though? That's
did you
on
see
its
the
card.
Other stuff?
Well, yeah, there's all kinds of weird things going on. Like, why is the cranberry blue?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Huh? Oh my gosh, I thought that was a blueberry.
No,
exactly.
It's a cranberry, and yet it has like ears as well.
Yeah.
Little leaf ears.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what they were doing.
You guys.
Like, there's everything not right about these pictures, but that's the point.
I like the derpy strawberry with the big buck teeth drooling.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, like, even the component kind of carry that out. I mean, cool, they're very easy to distinguish. Green for seed, blue for water, red for food. But what bothered me is that the food that we're feeding these planets looks suspiciously like meat.
Yeah. Steak.
Oh.
Yeah, the raw steak.
Yeah, from what animal or person do those steaks come from?
Oh, the expansion, mutant animals. Like,
oh my gosh, that is funny though. I didn't even think about the fact that the food tokens are steak.
Yeah.
And good also, for clarity. I wondered why the farmers looked so sort of odd. And now I get it. They're kind of malevolent.
Yeah, they are.
Farmers look kind of like, yeah, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. One of them is holding this pitchfork like towards the audience. Like, all right. Like maybe he's defending himself against that weird like melon or whatever. Mm. Who knows?
Well, suffice it to say, I think it definitely evokes the theme. Yeah, and and it does evoke apparently strong feelings in you guys.
It bothered me. It like haunted my nightmares.
Yeah, it has a garbage pail kid kind of
feel to everything. That's true. That's true. The art is colorful, well done, and definitely it's definitely within like it's consistent and it does evoke the spirit of the game. So, all right, we played this game on Board Game Arena.
Uh-huh.
And how did you think, Ed, it played?
I think it played fairly well and straightforward and easy. I liked how the actions are so clearly indicated by those little sign placards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a symbolic language that you mostly get right away, with just a couple of times you need to say, well, what did you mean by rotate crops? Or what do you mean by, I get to do a double action? What does that mean?
Yeah, the symbology was really simple. Now, this is a worker placement game. And Ed, how about the placement of these workers?
I mean, yeah, it's worker placement. Nice and easy. You can go there. And there seems to be a missing step because once their workers go out, they don't come back.
Yeah.
And so your next action, you just have to move one of your existing workers to a new space, which, it's cool. New ones to open up. You probably want to go to the more powerful new actions that just showed up. But now, when you have those other workers and you just need to move one, some of those other workers seem to stay there for the rest of the game.
That's the one thing. It's like there's three really good moves to do at the beginning of this game, and they are plus three to your benefit, right? So that's a really big bonus. And as far as I could see, once a farmer's placed on those, they pretty much camp them so nobody else can get them.
Right. I mean, you can also never get them again. It's not like you get the advantage of being there, but you don't want to give it up to anybody else because you'll be blocked for the rest of the game.
Exactly. You're not going to dare step off, even though, And also, it did seem that the use of the way you move your meeples, you only need one per turn. It did seem like there was no need to move the others.
Yep, exactly.
Right.
I never felt the need to move off of that spot, but I did move off of one spot just to see what would happen if I took the player one token spot.
Yeah.
And, that did absolutely nothing for me in the game.
I was wondering about that, too. I'm like, what is the benefit here? Because once you're moving, it's just a round robin.
Yeah.
So, there's a slight benefit. I mean, Celeste, you were first player, so you didn't need it. But
I guess I stayed first player the whole game, and I guess when a card is flipped.
Right. So I could have taken it. And then we played a two-player, and there's – it might have been nice to have first crack at a new card, which when a new card shows up every round, and it's going to have more powerful actions on it. And it'll be nice to be able to have first choice of those actions without hoping that somebody else doesn't take them.
But those actions seemed at best equivalent to the plus three
other
tokens
things
mark.
That were available.
Right. Yeah. It was already available.
I think there were actually upgrades. I mean, could you like, generally speaking, like the first next set were plus two of something and an action like feed or so.
But that didn't seem better to me than taking an action for three tokens.
I think that depends on where you're at in the game.
Right.
So, some cool stuff gets flipped. But by then, if it's like the third phase, by then you've got a specific plan. And it doesn't really matter if what shows up is really good if you really need something else in order to complete your plan at that point. So, but I do see that it could be a slight advantage for sure. But slight.
Yeah, very maybe. very situationally slight advantage over a card you start with, which doesn't really bode well for having exciting new revelations in the game, you know?
And if you time it correctly, just one more thing about the first player. If you time it correctly, you can take two turns in a row.
Right.
Because you could be the last player of a turn, go grab that first player, and now you get to do take your turn immediately after. That's where I saw
which would be a good time to give up your plus three spot. Give up the plus three at the end of the order, take the plus one and first player, and then
jump right
begin
back.
Next turn, jump right back on to plus three.
Ooh,
there you go. Oh, Ed. Wow, yeah, taking it an extra layer deep.
That is the one way to make it work.
Ed found it. He cracked it.
Yeah.
The exploit.
Yeah, if it's timed just right for you.
Well, Evan, you said something about resources being finite. Did you run into that problem?
Well, we didn't, but in a four-player game, then the most you can have is four players in this game. Maybe, because what? There's 30 of each of... There's 30 seats, mm-hmm. 30 pieces of meat, 30 things of water, which you can store. You know, you can hoard it. So in a four-player game, I don't know, you could start to run out of maybe one of these things.
I could see maybe, yeah. But you're storing up these tokens, and then you're like, okay, I have enough tokens to do the thing I want to do, which is to feed my plants to actually get the points and abilities for them. But then, you know, especially if there's four players, like all the spaces that you'd want to go on to actually feed your plants might be taken. So now you're just like, now what do I do?
Not the best strategy to employ. Mm. Also because the game plays quickly. Ends quick, so...
Yeah, I kind of thought it was good, though. I mean, it left me wondering, though. Mike, I see you were saying that the game was too short and it felt grindy on the second half. What I did was I felt like you got to be tight with your choices. Mm. And if you start picking crops and then like planting crops and you just keep planting, you're going to end up with too many crops to properly use, because you got to then water them, then you got to feed them, you know, then you got to yield them. And it's like feed, water, harvest. And it takes four turns essentially of just dealing with the card and then another set of turns to gather the resources for the card. So spending a lot of turns on one single card. So if you've got four cards, you probably got too many cards.
Yeah, you spend the first half of the game, only the first half of the game, getting the crops you want to use. And then the second half of the game is like, all right, feeding them. That's it, and then it's over.
I wonder if it makes, yeah, no, you got to, basically there's plan A and go. Yeah. But you got to figure out, well, if a combo comes up early enough, let's talk about the combos, because they exist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Have any luck utilizing combos?
It was tough.
Yeah.
By the time it was luck of the draw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did manage to get a couple of combos off, but yeah,
I didn't even want to talk about you, Ed. I have a problem, all right, with what you did. We'll get there. But I thought that maybe it makes more sense to, does it make more sense, do you think, to get a single card, do everything you need to do for that card, and then move on? Then you're maybe making more economical choices because you know, but you basically can't do any comboing.
Well, it highly depends on the card, because some cards rely on other cards being finished for their bonuses. So, and you don't know if those cards that you need are ever going to come up in the first half of the game. So,
well, I don't know that some of them don't require finishing the card to get the bonus, though. For example,
some of them don't. Right.
Right. Right. So, for example, like one card might be a pepper, and it might say if you plant an onion and a Swiss chard in here, you get, and then you don't have to feed and water the onion and Swiss chard. You can just let them dry up and die.
But still, essentially, you're only using one card for the whole game.
That's right. That's right. So, Ed, let me tell you what Ed did. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I think there might be a balance issue with one card in this game. Uh-huh. So, and it came out early. So, broccoli. Let's talk about broccoli.
Yep, he did that to us, too.
Let's talk about broccoli. So, broccoli.
Here
we go.
I'm going to address this directly to Atheris and to Sebastian and Rosio. No, broccoli allows you to steal or take or use another crop's bonus. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. At the end of the game. So that's all you have to do, okay, is get a broccoli, mm-hmm. feed and water it, get it prepped, right? Mm-hmm. And then wait for everybody else to do all the hard work and pick the best thing that was done at the end of the game.
Oh,
the choices are phenomenal at that
you
point.
Steal seven turns, basically, by doing that.
That's how I jumped from last place to second place over Mike. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Thanks to Mike.
Yeah. So I think broccoli needs to be looked at. And if you're playing this game, maybe make some house rules around broccoli. Yeah.
Well, looking at you, broccoli.
Yeah, watch out.
Broccoli once again ruins the party.
Beware of the broccoli. We knew we hated it for a reason. Okay, explorers, it's time to dig up or bury mutant crops. What say you, Evan?
Mutant Crops is definitely a good introduction to the mechanic concepts of worker placement and resource management. The game plays quickly. There's not a lot of time to build that engine, so try not to be disappointed by that. But these crops are worth digging up.
Mike?
Well, the basic concept was decent. I like the, you know, the worker placement part. The art was appropriately disturbing. but the game was way too short and imbalanced to get me excited. I want to expand on this design, but not necessarily play this version of it again. So I'll just bury it.
Ed?
Yeah, Mutant Crops, easy to learn, quick to pick up and play. And there are neat combos to shoot for. The worker placement mechanics are kind of like a familiar, you know, family home for me. I'm just not sure there was a lot of depth. You know, if you hang around so as long as those meeples seem that they put, it's okay, I think, as an introduction to these mechanics. But for me, I want a little bit more meat on those bones. So I'm going to have to give it a light bury.
I want a little more meat in my
more
peppers.
Meat.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I did like the comboing. The balance did seem a hair off, as we said. So, the meeple placement, a little bit of tweaking there. Rules were overall good. I liked the concept, and I definitely thought it was on theme, right? Theme-informed play. Right. Mm-hmm. I got to give it a light dig, because if somebody put this game out in front of me at a con or something, I would certainly play it. Mm-hmm. And I did like the easy playability of it. So, light dig for me. Nice. What mutant plants would you want in your yard? Let us know. We are at Which Game First on all social media. Hey, everybody, what is going on with Which Game First?
Monday nights, Which Game First is live. We are playing games online, and we're inviting you to come along and explore with us. Every Monday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, join us on YouTube, join us on Twitch, join us on Facebook, and watch us fumble and stumble our way through the game. We are interactive. We're always taking your questions, your comments, your suggestions, and often playing trivia with the audience during the game. So it's an interactive experience that we don't want you to miss.
Evan, you did an interview too, right? What's up with that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a special episode that's up and about right now by the designers of the game called Cryptic Nature. I had the pleasure of interviewing them, and we posted that as a side quest. You can find it at whichgamefirst.com. And their game is in Kickstarter mode, and it's going to be coming out later on this year. We're looking forward to it.
And did we just recently change our live podcast time for our patron-only podcast, guys?
We did.
Yeah, what time is the live show now?
Now the live show is at 7 p.m. on Monday night, Eastern Standard Time.
All right, 7 p.m. on Monday night. So if you want to become a patron of this show, it is just $3 a month. You will get access to our live show every Monday night. And also, you can catch it in your feed, which is the patron-only feed, which will include both the regular podcast and your patron-only podcast, which is called
Bonus Points. Bonus Points.
And you'll get access to the entire back catalog of Bonus Points, as well as access to our private Discord channel. And we wanted to invite everybody, if you're interested in doing that, to just go to our website, click on Become a Patron today. Thank you very much to our patrons. You guys keep everything rolling over here. And we want to thank all our listeners. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Our next game up this week is Dog Park, designed by Lottie Hazel and Jack Hazel, published by Birdwood Games 2022. Number of players 1 to 4, ages 10 and up. Playtime 40 to 80 minutes.
Well,
clear that range. Afternoon. Mikey, what's in the box?
The cover of the box shows us a variety of cute puppers patiently waiting near a rolling green field, while the Lassie lookalike gently holds her leash in her mouth. Inside, we discover a lot of stuff, so get ready. 163 unique dog cards, 4 lead boards, a game board, 4 screen-printed wooden walker meeples, 4 screen-printed wooden dog reputation markers, 100 wooden resource tokens, a screen-printed wooden first walker token, another screen-printed wooden bird round tracker, 50 walked tokens, 5 location tokens, 4 offer dials, a custom wooden die, 8 player aids, 4 solo objective cards, 16 location bonus cards, 10 objective cards, 11 forecast cards, 7 breed expert cards, a 100-page score pad, and 2 custom component game trays with a Z. And that's what's in the box.
Yeah, you can kind of tell by the cover of this that it's going to be fancy. So I'm not surprised.
Oh, yeah.
Well, before we tell you if this game was a walk in the park, Evan, unleash the rules.
Dog Park is a competitive set collection and point-to-point movement game in which players take on the role of dog walkers who recruit, walk, and care for their dogs over 4 rounds. Each round is split into 4 phases. The recruitment phase, where players compete in 2 rounds of offers to add dogs to their kennels. Offers are made with players' reputation. That means victory points, so you have to place those things wisely. Next, the selection phase. Players decide which dogs to place on their lead or leash to walk during this round. Then there's the walking phase. Players journey through the dog park with their fellow walkers, collecting resources, earning reputation, and interacting with other walkers. And finally, the home time phase. Players earn reputation for their walk dogs, but they'll lose reputation for any unwalked dogs in their kennel. So don't disregard those puppies. Players must choose their routes and dogs carefully to earn the best reputation and prove they are the most accomplished walker of them all. At the end of the game, the player with the most reputation wins. That's a good puppy.
All right. How did you guys like the look of this game? It's quite fancy.
I mean, I think the doggy drawings are going to be a big draw to this game. They look so nice.
They're accurate.
Really accurate. You could tell which breed you're looking at by the picture, for sure. Even by their facial expressions and the way they sit. Like, they look really good.
Now, it's the cover looks... Is it painted? Or is this colored pencil? It kind of looks like... a blend, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, almost has like a watercolor feel, but I think you're maybe closer to the mark with the pencil. I'm not really sure.
It looks like a tablet drawing to me, but like a really good one, you know?
That could explain it, because it does look like a combination of styles, but very technical. You know, the colorings of all the animals look accurate. Everything looks really cute.
Yeah, very cute.
Soft, too. I like it.
Soft,
Inviting.
Yeah. Inviting and really good art. Very well done. You know, high quality, realistic. There you go. Realistic looking art.
Yeah. Maybe not quite as sharp as the pictures from, like, say, Wingspan, but close to that level.
Yeah. Okay, no, this style is softer.
Yeah. Much softer. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. All right. So I like Ed's first note. Nice doggy drawings. That's a good note. That's a good.
But then he said there's sure to be a big draw for this game. Well played, Ed.
Yeah. We totally took your pun, Ed, and we did it for ourselves because it was good. All right. So how about the play style of this game, Ed? Tell us about that. We won't steal that from you.
I mean, the play style is kind of like a combination of resource gathering, because you're going out and collecting resources for your dog, and you got to get the right treats, right? And there's like a phase of set collection where you're trying to get the right dog for your kennel. And then you're competing with other players for a walk in the park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why were you rushing, Ed?
Yeah, right?
Why?
Oh, my God. Can we? You mind to jump to that right now?
Yeah, tell me about it.
So, yeah, he was just talking about how you, like, walk through the park to gather the sweet toys and treats that they like. But, you know, it's kind of like a game that we played called Tokaido, where, you know, you move forward a number of spaces, and then you block the space you're on, and people can either go before you and go again or go after you and, like, move past you and get the thing past you. Mm-hmm. But Ed was, like, moving the maximum speed across the park.
Huh.
Yeah, and instead of, and like Tokaido, you can just take the last few spaces for yourself while people pass you. But in this, once they get to the end, you're going to get, like, a negative point modifier.
Yeah, it's
because you're the last spot to land.
First player, last one out of the park, negative point.
Oof. That's right. Whoa. So, and the first player to the end, that triggers the end of the round. So everyone gets one more move?
One more move.
And if you can't make it to the end, you're in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she didn't have enough time to collect the resources you really wanted on that board if you rushed to the end, Ed.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I was wondering why everybody else was so quick to leave the park. Why?
It wasn't funny at all.
We're here to walk the dog. Why is everybody in a hurry to get out of here?
I know.
Oh my gosh.
An obvious dog lover there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That really put a cramp on my.
Who won the game?
I think Ed did. I did not.
So did the rushing work?
It worked because you can. Apparently. Some dogs are easier to please. So if you pick the cheaper dogs and then rush through the park, nobody else who picks a higher, like, to feed dog has a chance.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Here's the thing. You're bidding on these dogs first, okay? And what are you using to get these dogs into your kennel? You're using your victory points. So you're investing, right? So this is this is an investment in the future. I'm like, okay, I'm going to invest my victory points to get this specific dog because if I take it on the right path in the dog park, I'm going to clean up at the end, right? And come out ahead. But then if somebody runs to the end of the course, you don't have the chance to get everything you needed for that dog. And your investment goes down the tube because you're also the last player. You'll get more negative points.
Yeah.
There's an additional incentive to kind of walk a little faster. Because as Mikey mentioned, you block the spaces when you're there. You could visit the same spot if you want to, but there's a penalty for doing that. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to rush forward to a spot I really want. This way, people can't block my next move. If I'm ahead of the pack, no one's going to get ahead of me and block the spaces I want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, I saw the strategy.
Oh, no, we get the strategy.
We understand the strategy, Ed.
Yeah, we get your cutthroat, you know, care about Ed, less about the dog strategy. Exactly.
Yeah, I'll choose the pug who only needs one toy and then rush out of the park when he gets it. Yeah, we saw it.
I mean, I can't lie. It seems like he had totally adopted a strategy I would have gone for.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's like get out of this park, get the dog, and go. I mean, I hate walking dogs, you know?
But what if your dog needs things that are in the park? You don't necessarily want to go on that fast walk. You want to collect the things that you need. It costs resources to walk.
You need at least three squeaky toys. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
My gosh, that sounds awful. High maintenance dogs?
Well, all the dogs have a certain maintenance value to them.
But some are clearly higher than others. Now, the truth, Evan. Did you pick your dogs based on looks?
No, I did not. No, all I actually read the cards to see what the special abilities of these dogs were doing, but plus balanced it against what the cost was. Some of these dogs require three, maybe four, you know, either treats or, you know, squeaky toys or whatever else in order to keep the dog, you know, maintained. Mm-hmm. But then you got to read also about what the special ability is and what that unlocks. And if you can unlock things about dogs that help you during the round, as opposed to grabbing up the dogs that only give you game end score bonus points, you know, and victory points, then you can use your dogs to your advantage and it'll yield more resources as the game goes on. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this. So yes, the last person out of the park gets negative points, but Evan, if you took your, if Ed finishes the game early and you took the time to get everything you needed, would it have negated the negative points? Or do you think you could have made up the difference?
You don't get the time, because once someone reaches the end, you get one last
minute. Oh, okay,
That was my biggest criticism of this game, is that other players control your pace too much. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. So you don't start off knowing that this is a quick game or this is a slow game. You don't start off knowing what's going to. That everybody gets 9 turns, say.
Yeah, know your opponents and know their dispositions on how they like to play.
But nobody would have expected Ed to be a rusher.
Yeah, no. Well, actually, no, that's not true. Ed does this to me in a lot of games. Efficient. Where I'm building an engine. I'm building a really efficient engine, but he ends the game early.
I see what Mikey's doing. It's like, if I give him too much time.
Yeah. It's going to be a blowout if you give him too many extra rounds.
How dare you pay attention to the other players and their strategies.
Yeah, me and Ed have a constant struggle of this where he shuts the game down one turn before I blow him out by like 20 points.
Yeah, and he was cussing up like hard because he had twice as many dogs as I did.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's right.
Yeah, I was in a good spot. If Ed didn't rush, it would have been ugly.
Oh, and by the way, if you don't walk some of these dogs, you know, if you ignore them or say, I'll do it next round, and if you ignore the dogs, you're going to get negative points for that. Yeah. You can't leave them unattended.
Yeah.
Right.
The dog walking board that you walk them on is similar every round, but each board, there's like different boards that you can flip over and use, has slightly different bonuses. Like one of the spots will give you an extra bone or something like that. So you're not 100% sure what the walk is going to look like next round. But, you know the basics of what you're going to be doing in the park.
Interesting. Yeah. Did that seem exciting?
It helped.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, it was neat because you can see, that bite's going to give you 2 balls instead of 1. Yeah, I definitely want to make sure I rush up ahead and grab that.
Mm. There's Ed with the rushing again.
Rushing.
Yeah. Like I said, there were incentives.
Why did
to try to grab those little... sexier spot.
Why did the dogs have to suffer because of your greed, Ed? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, Ed.
You think the dogs aren't excited about seeing 2 balls over 1 ball? They are. They're just as excited.
Some are.
They probably like the fast walk, actually. It was probably exciting for them.
Depends on the breed.
Yeah.
Okay, explorers, it's time to dig up Orberry Dog Park. Ed?
There were so many options to explore here and not enough action to do everything you want to do. I mean, I'm not that much of a dog person, but I must admit, this dog looks really cute. Aww. So I'll dig this bone up and give the dog another walk in the park.
Mike?
The game was kind of cute. The art was great. I really did not like how much other players could force your hand. I think I'd give it another shot, though. I want to see what it feels like with a different strategy. And for that reason, I'll dig it up.
Evan?
Well, Dog Park's a competitive game, but the theme is light. And for those of us who love dogs, I mean, just tending to those animals gives one a sense of victory, no matter the score. Theme definitely informed play, and this game certainly does not bite. Dig it up.
We want to know what your favorite dog breed is. Let us know. We are at Which Game First. Our last game up this week is Diceathlon, designed by Chris Haney. Self-published in 2022, number of players 2 to 99. Let's go. Let's go, rolling rights.
Yep.
99.
Are we sure that's not the age instead of
the... It would take
hours to get through this game at 99 players. It's not simultaneous. 99
player rolling right?
Whoa.
That would set some kind of record. Oh, maybe. Well, that's the point.
Yeah, maybe we could do a world record of rolling. How long? The longest rolling, right?
A tournament, just the
playtime 10 to 20 minutes, or with 99 players, 10 to 20 hours.
That's probably per player.
Yeah. Okay, Mike, what's in the box?
The cover of the box is a kind of sparse array of happy athletes rowing, skateboarding, even carrying an Olympic torch. Inside the box, we find the exact opposite of the last game with a score pad and a fistful of 6-sided dice. And that is it. That's what's in the box.
Well, before we tell you how the judges scored this game, Evan, tally those rules.
Diceathlon or diceathlon.
Dice-thalon.
Dice-thalon.
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be decathlon, so you gotta say diceathlon.
Yeah, yeah.
Diceathlon.
It's a tricky looking name for sure.
Well, there's no extra A between the H and the L. So that
I got it right away.
Dysathlon.
Dysathlon.
This game is a roll and write game where players compete across six different sports to win the most gold medals. The players roll the dice, and in turn, they take a die and they write the number on their score sheet in one of the six sports. Each sport has their own specific goals to how the player can win the medal at the end of the game. Here are the six sports. Rowing crew, right? So there's two rows, and you make sure your dice you place are equal on both sides of the rows. Climbing. Ascend, starting with a 1 at the bottom and end up with a 6 at the top. Golf. Score the correct total dice for one or any of the three different holes. Skateboarding. Complete the three obstacles correctly with the correct combination of dice. Hurdles. Make sure the dice you place are in the correct order, low numbers versus high numbers. And finally, the long jump. Place a high multiplier dice so that the longer your jump, the better your score. Highest total score wins. Now go for the gold.
Roll for the gold.
For the gold.
All right. All right, so we played this game on Board Game Arena, which is actually a pretty great way to play a roll and write. I mean, obviously nothing beats pen and pad of paper, but if you had to do it, what's great about Board Game Arena, again, is the rules guiding. You could just mouse over each section of your card to see the rules again, just to make sure you're following the you're following along and placing the dice correctly. So, guys, what'd you think of the look of this roll and write?
I mean, yeah, it has appropriate graphics, and they're thematic, but sparse.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a roll and write. You get the picture on the pad, and that's it, right?
Yeah, it felt clip arty kind of too, like the flat color scheme they had going on.
Guys, again, it's a roll and write. I mean, well, come on.
We've seen some roll and writes where they put some, you know, detail into the background and go an extra sort of step.
Like, for sure.
The person doing the climbing, right? Instead of looking like they're straining to climb fast, they just have a smile, which is the exact same smile the skateboarder and the rowers all have on. There's no intensity. There's no like variety in their look. And you could do that with two dots in a line.
Okay. You can't. All right, fair enough. I liked the background, which was like an arena, like a track arena. I thought that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've played roll and writes that I've really loved where there's like nothing but a rainbow. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no, sure. It's true. It's true.
There are some graphics here. It is thematic.
Thanks, Ed.
High concession, Ed.
Thank you for stating the facts, Ed.
Yes, just the facts, man.
All right, I guess we're moving on to the play. So we roll three dice and we share these dice.
Well, you roll three dice if it's two players.
Oh, right. And we share the dice, Ed. Mm-hmm. What'd you think about the play?
You roll dice and hope for the best.
More facts.
Isn't that true with every die roll ever?
Wow.
You roll the dice and hope they roll the way you want them to.
That's like saying, yeah, and then you take your pencil and write a number in a box.
With the pencil.
Yeah. Well, yes, that's right. We rolled and then we wrote things down.
So the game did not lie.
That's the gameplay. All right, done. We're on there.
Yeah, if you're paying close attention, you can really punk other players by taking dice that you know you can.
The die blocking is real.
It's real.
Yeah, it is.
your options are wide in the beginning, obviously. Yeah. This is true of many roll and writes. You know, you can no matter what. Okay, doesn't matter. I'm going last test die. I can take this die. I got so many choices. Mm-hmm. As the game creeps on, those choices diminish. And oh my gosh, you wind up in trouble at the end.
You
get to the point where only one or two, maybe, different faces are the only ones that'll work for you. Otherwise, game over, man.
It left me wanting to immediately play again, though, because Ed had an advantage, definitely, in play and having played this game before. Sure. Because learning the rules is a little bit tricky in this particular roll and write, because there's basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different rules. For placement. And that's quite a bit for roll and write. Usually there's maybe two, possibly three different spots you could place. and you're just kind of focusing on doing the same thing over and over again. These rules were vastly different depending on the sport you were putting it in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, some you want a high score, others you want a low score, and then others you want to have to use the fewest dice.
And then, other times it's like placed carefully. One I completely misunderstood was golf, and it's totally on me.
Yeah, that was probably the trickiest.
Yeah, but that was totally on me. I know the low score in golf wins, but me, I was like, okay, the more dice I put in, the higher my score is going to be, so I'm going to beat Ed in that one.
You need less, yeah.
So that was
like
crazy.
Represents the number of strokes in a way. Fewer strokes, right.
Which I thought that was clever, though. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. But it gives me, that's why I wanted to play again because okay, I know the rules now. Let me play again.
Yeah, the hurdles kind of confused me a little bit because when you're on the ground part of the hurdle, you need the low number and then you need a number higher than it. But in the end, you're adding all those numbers together.
Yep.
So if you did like 5-6, 5-6, it's not the difference between the numbers, right? It's the total of all the numbers. So,
but I think the low number wins in hurdles. So you wanted to do 1-4, 1-4, 1-4. Yeah. See, that's the thing.
No, because look at this one here. It's like 4-5-4.
Yeah. But that they had a bad score.
13-15, 16-18, 20. They added all those numbers up and they got 20.
As long as the order is correct and you complete it, you get it.
You can still get the score, but the low score wins in that one. So you want a low number.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, see, that's what's confusing, right? I'm even still confused by it.
But
so
in
instead
crew,
of the 5-6, the 1-2, 1-2, 1-2 would be
Right. Yeah, so the rules are a little tricky, but not unbearable. You're not like throwing your pencil up in despair. It's just like, wait. So
how hard it is to snap it a over golf your pencil? Knee. It's hard to snap one of those things. They're so
a
small.
Little golf pencil for sure.
Well, that's you give it to a baby to do. No, don't do that.
Yeah. Wow. Do not listen to Evan's advice. But yeah, like the climb is one of those ones where you need specific numbers in a specific order. So you kind of want to knock stuff like that out early. But if you do focus on knocking that out early, you're going to lose in golf. Somebody's going to
Something's going to sacrifice. You're not going to win all six of these competitions. That's just not going to happen.
I ended up with something like 3 more turns and I still lost to Ed.
Oh, yeah.
Ed finished way earlier than me.
Here we go with the speed again.
I couldn't place it. And there were some events I could not complete. Well, I think Celeste completed most, if not all
of them,
events.
But so fat that's... lot of good it did me.
Yeah, right. That's the trick, right? You got to try to kind of save some of those dump rolls for the end, maybe, so you can finish all the events, but you don't want to save them too long because then, you're stuck with whatever the dice roll when the other person wins their gold medal in the other thing.
Yeah, it's almost like if you play too many sports, you're only going to bronze, and if you got to focus on the gold, you got to just focus on, 2 or 3 sports.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of like the Olympics, all about the medal, baby.
Right. Yeah, there's no one person that's in every event, so.
Now, when you roll, you get what you get, and you don't get upset, right?
Yeah.
But, thank goodness we have coaches to help us along the way.
Oh, true.
Mm-hmm. A coach
they don't help us much, though.
Well, they're few. I mean, because you can only – a coach is a die manipulation.
Yeah.
And you get 3 of them throughout the entire course of the game.
Yeah.
I think I went through mine in the first third of the game.
First 3 rolls, I think it was very close to it.
I don't like this. I don't like that.
Yeah. It's like, where'd coach go? He went for coffee. He's not coming back.
Yeah. I mean, if you're strategizing, obviously you should save them for the end when those dice come up and you have not a lot of choices left.
For real. But who's going to do that?
Nobody does. Sure.
Okay, explorers, it's time to dig up or bury Dysathlon. Let's start with Mike.
There are a million places to put your dice, but in the end, I couldn't tell or even didn't care why I was putting them there, so I just bury it.
Wow.
I just didn't care.
Mike, that was so
sorry, strange. Man. I mean to be harsh,
right,
but it's
okay,
true.
All right.
Holy moly.
All right, Ed?
No, as an excuse to roll lots of dice in a game, it's okay. Now, there are a few choices to be made, but the luck of the dice and what other people pick will really limit those choices. Probably just a bit too limited for my initial take. It's not a bad game, but I'm also not particularly excited to play again, so I'm going to give it a light berry.
Evan?
I'm going to play with Mike.
Oh, okay.
Dysathlon. It's not unlike other games we've reviewed where you know, the board has these designated areas, each with their own scoring rules. You place your items there, in this case, dice, to make sure that you get the right combinations. I like these kinds of games. They're light. They're easy to learn and easy to play and offer a little bit of a challenge. But they're not for the hardest of gamers. But on light game night, I think it scores. Dig it up.
Yeah, I almost had the opposite experience of Mike. I did want to place these dice, and I was interested in the sport and winning the sport. And I was motivated by that. You know, like, I like crew, so I focused on crew first. You know, not a heavy theme game, but it's a roll and write. What do you want? If you're a roll and write fan, this is definitely a decent addition to your collection. And I think if you're a roll and write fan, you do want a variety. So I would definitely recommend it for those guys. So it's a dig up for me.
All right. I'd play it again with you guys.
Yes, we got him back on the field.
What event in Dice Olympics would you have? Wait, would have you bringing home the gold? Ed, what does that even mean? Ed writes these.
If there were the Dice Olympics, which medal, which event would give you the gold? I mean, like, for example, I would go for the gold and dice towers, man. Dice tower tumbling, yeah.
Wow.
Maybe Mikey could bring home the gold and spilling dice on the floor.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Now I think we have to come up with the Dice Olympics and run them at a convention.
Ooh, here we go.
Dice Olympics. All right,
99 guys. Players.
Come on, Celeste. I'm already working on another board game. Don't get my head flowing.
Starting a new one.
Oh my God. We're at which game first? Roll it, Evan.
Here we go.
That brings us to the end of our show. We look forward to hearing about all the game exploring you're doing. If you'd like more perks and content from our show, just go to our website, click on Become a Patron today, and for just $3 a month, you will get access to our patron-only podcast called
Bonus Points.
And you will get our everlasting gratitude for being a supporter of the show. Thank you very much to our patrons. If you get a chance, please leave us a like or a rating or a review wherever you're talking about this show, wherever you're picking up this show. It would be a huge help. And join our chat on our Discord. We're always there. Happy gaming, explorers.
Oh, a delicious pepper. It has a face.
Make sure to work out those fingers, the dicathlon. You wouldn't want to sprain a finger now.
Come on. One, three, or five. No, no.